Hello? Can you hear me? Okay, there it is. Good morning. Good to be with you today. Good to be back up here today. It's kind of a strange thing to get to sit with my family during the sermon last week. I enjoyed Randy being with us for the weekend. It was a really good weekend all around. We got to spend some good time together doing man things Sunday morning, or Saturday morning, and watching basketball, and then found out Saturday afternoon that Oregon has a hockey team, which I had no idea. The foremans told me about that, and so I thought I got to go see some hockey. So I went and saw the Oregon hockey game. There was a lot of fighting and banging against the glass and in Christian Love, and it was much fun. I got to pull out my hockey jersey, which my wife was just mortified by, but I figure how many times you get a chance to wear a hockey jersey. So I took it out and had fun watching hockey. And then we had a great time with Randy Sunday morning. And also the elders and I got to get together with Randy Sunday afternoon and just talk about church stuff, which is kind of his thing. So that was good. But I got one or two last week of the, well, it was nice to hear Randy, but I kind of missed hearing you this week. So I had all I needed last week. It was great to be encouraged to, but it's good to be back up here again. Glad you all are here. Before we get started, a reminder of something that's coming up. Our Eugene Youth Rally is coming up on February 19th through the 21st. Terry Davis will be back with us to lead worship. He was here last year, and if you were here, you can remember the energy that came along with that. It was a really good good weekend for that. And then also Andrew Baker will be with us this year. Andrew runs the summer camp at Harding University, where about 2,000 teenagers come in every summer and get to learn about God together and worship together. And be glad to have him come out and share with us from the Word of God that weekend. Coming along with that, of course, when we have a whole bunch of teenagers come our way, there are a few things we need from you. One, if you have teenagers that have been hiding in your house for a while, that don't come out a lot, this is the time. So invite those kids, grandkids, whoever it might be that might not be an active part of what we do here, to be a part of the weekend. Secondly, we have got to house a lot of guys in homes that weekend. The girls will be here at the building, but guys will be in your homes. So if you have space for two or more guys and would be willing to put up with that for a weekend and all that entails and your fridges being bare and all of that stuff, talk to Denise Foreman. She's working on that stuff, and she would be glad to throw your name into the mix. Also, you'll see announcements come up for things that are needed. I think we had one for milk jugs in the last week or so. That is for some sort of game involving milk jugs that I have no idea. But when you see things like that, we could definitely use your help with it. And then also just be praying about the rally. We had about 80 to 100 kids come in last year. And so we're hoping for something like that again. And we hope it will be a blessing to them and their home churches and to us. That Sunday where we have about 215, 220 of us in here is a lot of fun. Singing's good. It's just a good, encouraging day. So be praying about that coming up just a few weeks away. All right, if you want to turn over to James chapter 4. James chapter 4. Now, if you have not been with us recently, we have been slowly trotting our way through the book of James. And there is a lot of good stuff in here. You might pick a different pace some Sundays than others. But there's a lot of good practical teaching for what it is to live this Christian life that we're trying to live. And today we find ourselves in chapter 4. We talked last, 2 weeks ago, I guess now, about submitting ourselves to God, and James follows up with this section beginning in verse 11, where he writes, "Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you are not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it." It reminds me of the words Roger had for us during communion time. That we're not so much speaking about each other, but we're speaking about God and his ability to save and things of that nature. Or the way I've seen it put online several times is this. Maybe you've seen this shared too. Don't judge someone just because they sin differently than you. And I think I've seen a few people here in this room who have shared this. And I love the thought because this is one I need to be slapped across the face with every now and then. Because I have a lot of patience for the sins that I struggle with and not so much patience for the sins that you may struggle with. My wife worked at a substance abuse center where young men would come in. It was a residential place, and they would stay for several weeks. And they would go through therapy and try to get at the root of the problem that started their substance abuse. And I remember when she first went to work there, I had about that much patience for substance abuse. And there's one reason for it. I don't deal with it. And maybe that's simplistic, but I've just never really been tempted by that stuff. Now, if you start getting into other sins that I am tempted by, then I'm expecting a whole lot more patience for you than I had for substance abuse. Now, what I started to learn through her time there was a lot of the things that go into that problem. And what I came out of it with was a better understanding of how easy it is for people to get entrenched in that and how hard it is to get out of. And I started to realize it's really just like whatever sin we might deal with. Each of us has a different struggle, a different temptation, and for each of us, we have tried and tried and tried to overcome that, and we struggle, keep falling back into it. In verse 12, he says, "There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy, but you, who are you to judge your neighbor?" Who are you? Or maybe the way we might think of it nowadays is, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? And we all have our moments of this. I've mentioned to you before, I like football. I have never played a down of real football with pads and a helmet and all of that stuff in my life. Maybe should have somewhere along the way. I had a very, if she's listening this morning, I had a very overprotective mother. She'll be listening on the podcast sometime this week and she can hear that. She didn't want me to play football. I got in the band. I played the band. But I grew to really like football. And as I understood it more and more, I really enjoy football. And sometimes I will find myself watching football yelling at my screen because they're not doing what they should be doing or because the referees are not doing their job right or whatever it might be. And at some point in the course of all that, I'll think to myself, I don't know what I'm talking about. I mean, I understand this game to some degree, but I don't know what it's like to the intensity that you bring your body and your mind and everything else to, and in the moment, the things you might do. There was a story this past week, after watching the hockey game, I saw this. There was a hockey player that was wiped out at one end of the ice, and nothing was called, and he was very upset about that. And on the way back to the bench, still looked a little woozy as he was getting to the bench, and right before he got to the bench, there was a referee with his back turned, and he wiped that referee out. Came right up behind him and just nailed him into the wall. And he said later, he looked up, didn't realize who was there, was trying to get to the bench, and just instinct took over. He was still kind of woozy. And it's really hard to tell the intent involved in something like that or whether it was accidental. It looked very intentional when you watch the video in slow motion 14 times. And I watched that and I thought, on the one hand, I look at that guy and I think, you never lay your hand on the referee. I mean, that's the first thing you learn. On the other hand, I don't understand what it's like to have that level of adrenaline or to be able to skate that well, that fast, with a stick in your hand. I don't get all of everything that goes into it. And so when I try to judge that, I have to step back and say, who do I think I am? For each of us, as I look at those guys going through substance abuse and try to decide what that's all about, who do I think that I am? When I look at the sin that you struggle with, who do I think I am? And that the same way, when you look at the sin that I struggle with, who do you think that you are, that you're able to decide these things? And what we realize very quickly is there is one who is capable of doing this, and he is in heaven. And he is here amongst us this morning, but he is the judge. Not us, not you, not me, not the most reasonable among us, but God. Continuing. Now listen. You who say today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money, why do you not even know what will happen tomorrow? What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Make a lot of plans about tomorrow. My wife went on a retreat with some of her folks from NCU this week. Was kind enough to send me a couple of pictures of the coast where I was not, and she was, and I think she was getting even for my train journey a few years ago. But anyway, I looked at those pictures, and I thought to myself, we haven't been to the coast in too long, and you guys have laughed at us along the way because we like the coast, and we go there every chance we get, but it's been, at least 6 weeks since we've been to the coast. And I like to get in my car, and I like to go over there, and so we start thinking about when can we go back to the coast. And we got the rally coming up, and David's playing basketball all the time. We got all these things happening. But maybe once we get through the end of all of that, then we can finally go to the coast. And I think about this as James writes, we make a lot of plans for the future, not really knowing what the future will hold. I like to think that there will be 200 and some odd of us here in 3 weeks on a Sunday when the youth rally happens. What I don't know is, will a giant snowstorm come in? What I don't know is, are people conflicted with some other thing that's coming on? Or the other thing I don't know is, will it be 300 and we're trying desperately to figure out how to house them all? We can make our plans, but in the end, these things are in the hands of God. And we can try and try and try to make it just so, but in the end, they are in God's hands. So these two thoughts, it seems like an abrupt change with James between these two thoughts, but at the same time, I think they're kind of related. Sometimes we will make these judgments of others as if they need to get these things fixed on our timing. If you could just get this stuff together and then everything will be okay. Or on our side, we might think, well, I will get that all together, but I will get that together in March once things slow down a little bit. In reality, we don't know what time we will have. That is something that only God knows. So as we plan for tomorrow, we have to realize that it lays in His hands. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. First of all, if it is the Lord's will. And I know this is the tagline we put into prayers because we're supposed to. But do we really operate in this way? I will do these things if it is the Lord's will. I think of, and Roger mentioned our adult class this morning, we talked about the book of Hosea. Hosea, within the first three verses of the book, is told by God to go find himself an adulterous woman in an evil land. This is not how we learned to do marriage at Harding. You didn't look for an adulterous woman in an evil land. You looked for people who were pure and whole and trying to do things the right way. And the command that God gives to Hosea doesn't sound like a good idea. And Hosea is struck with this moment of, am I going to do what I want to do or am I going to do the Lord's will? And the Lord's will, at least in Hosea's case, leads to a lot of headaches. Leads to a lot of difficulties. Leads to a lot of things not going the easy way. And sometimes in our lives, the Lord's will does not lead in a direction that we would choose. Sometimes in our lives, the Lord's will does not mean the easy way. Sometimes in our own lives, the Lord's will does not mean the way we would pick. It means the way that He would take us. And getting to that point for us is often a struggle. I would imagine a lot of you sitting here this morning are not in the career that you originally planned on. I would imagine a lot of you this morning are not living in the place that you originally planned to live. There are a lot of things that have come along on your path, but at the same time, the things on your path have brought you here today. And is it the Lord's will that you are here today? I think so. I think He has brought us all here together for a purpose in His will. And more than that, before we leave this behind, I love this you ought to say. If you were paying attention to Randy last week, especially during the men's day, but a little bit on Sunday too, I believe, he talked a lot about the ought to's. And the idea of there are things that we ought to do, things that we ought to say. These are not just things left to chance. There is a way things can go and a way things ought to go. We have to be a little more in purposefully putting these things in the hands of God. And it seems kind of backwards, the idea of purposefully letting go. But that is what God asks us to do. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. We sometimes can appear to have an arrogance about us. Now, sometimes that's appearances, sometimes that's what it is. We can be arrogant folks in the sense that we feel that we have everything right, all the time, all figured out. And back to that idea of just because we sin in different ways doesn't mean I have it more figured out than you do. The arrogance about us in our plans and our judgment is an arrogance that is not put there by God. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do, and again, the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is a sin for them. The good we ought to do, we know. And I think we all know this deep down. We try to talk ourselves out of it, we try to rationalize, but deep down within you, God has placed the knowledge of right and wrong. You know when you're doing the right, you know when you're doing the wrong, and when you know the difference between the two, when you choose the wrong, that is sin. That is the very definition of sin. And too many times we find ourselves in that place. I want to share a list with you this morning to kind of tie this together. 9 sins Christians are okay with. And I mentioned this morning with my kids in the room, and one of the kids said, "That doesn't sound right. We're not supposed to be, there are sins, do I need to write these down? There are sins we're okay with?" And I realized that, you know, we would never say this out loud and mean it, but we live this. We live in such a way, and maybe not all of these will apply to you, but I think there will be enough of these that each of us will be uncomfortable in our own ways as we go through this. We struggle with the idea of sin, but we struggle more with the idea of sin that somebody else does. This is from Frank Powell at faithit.com. His idea here starts with the Space Shuttle Challenger. The 30th anniversary of the Challenger explosion was last Friday, Thursday, something like that. I remember being a seventh grader walking through the school hallway, and a coach came up to me and told me the space shuttle had exploded. Now, unfortunately for me, it was the same coach who always had a joke to tell and was known for that. And so I was waiting for the punchline and trying to understand how this was going to be funny. And he said, "No, I'm not joking. The space shuttle exploded." And I remember later watching the replays of it on TV and just being devastated. And I've told you guys before, I'm a space junkie. I love all this stuff. I would watch shuttle launches when I was a kid. And these seven people got up that morning, cold Florida morning, having no idea this would be their last day on Earth. Looking forward to what was ahead of them, the launch into space, the research they were going to do, all of the excitement. And what happened instead, and you can see it in this little circle here, was something called the O-ring. That if you were alive during that time, none of us had heard of before that moment, and all of us knew after. Because as commissions figured out what happened, there's a ring that is a seal on one of those little rockets. It seems small compared to the entire thing. It's actually 13 feet in circumference. When it's too cold, that ring does not seal properly. And so that morning, it was freezing. There was ice on the space shuttle that morning, unusual in Florida that time of year. And there's ice on this space shuttle. The ring is too cold, doesn't seal properly. And so when they take off, there's a leak within that causes the fuel tank to ignite, which causes everything to explode. And of all the things on that piece of equipment, this ring seems small. But when that one thing doesn't function properly, you have a problem. This was the worst accident they had had since the 60s when the Apollo 1 mission caught fire on the ground. And the problem there was a short in a wire. There are hundreds of miles of wire running through that spacecraft. A short in one wire caused everything to explode. When we let these sins, these nine sins that Christians are okay with, take root, we run that same kind of risk of just destroying things. And we will convince ourselves they're not that big a deal, they're not that important, it's not as bad as whatever. But when we let them take root, and especially multiple ones of them take root, we have a problem. So the nine sins Christians are okay with. We can get more and more tense in our chairs now. Number one, fear. We are all afraid of something. Some of those fears are reasonable, some of them are not. What we learn in Scripture in 1 John is that perfect love drives out fear. And so if we have the love of Christ within us, we should not fear. Now, do things come along that you might be afraid of? Yes, but we know that in the end, God wins. We know that we can trust Him, and we know whatever might happen to us here, there is still eternity on our side. And so there is really nothing that we should fear. Second, apathy. Everything's just going to be kind of okay, and we don't really care all that much, or the way we read about it in Revelation is a church that is lukewarm is one that God just wants to spit out of His mouth. He does not like lukewarm. He does not like people who don't care about anything. He does not like apathy. And if you are apathetic about God or about church, then it's time to start challenging yourself to think differently. And understand, we have all been there. If you have been excited about every day of church from the time you started, you should write a book. And we should all read it and figure out how you managed to do that. There are days when any one of us can come into this place or encounter these people that we just don't really want to do it that day. Can't be apathetic about God, about His people, about His church, about the Christian walk. We got to go full bore into this. We've got to be excited. We've got to be energized. We've got to be enthused, and we've got to show that to the people around us. Doesn't mean there's a bad day here and there, but we cannot let those bad days begin to take over us. I don't know how this got on the list. I did not write the list. The list was not cleared with me. Gluttony. Now, there are two sides to this. Okay, we will defend it, and then we will go off on it. There's not a sin of metabolism that I'm aware of, okay? Some of us struggle with this more than others. I remember vividly as a sixth grader sitting across the table from a guy who could just eat all of his stuff and all of my stuff and all the guys next to me's stuff and all the guy on this side, and he weighed 90 pounds soaking wet. And I would look at that guy and I would think to myself, how does he do this? And the answer was metabolism. That is something that, for whatever reason, God has not blessed me with that. Now, at the same time, can we get carried away with stuff? Can we do things to extremes? Can we do too much? Absolutely. Is it just food? No. There are a lot of things that we can abuse and take too far, and Christians are some of the worst about these kinds of things. We are known for our potlucks, are we not? We like food. So self-control is a piece of this. Number four, worry. None of us ever worry about anything, do we? And I know this seems kind of similar to fear, but Paul writes quite a bit about not worrying. And Jesus says, consider the birds of the air, flowers of the field. Why do we worry so much about everything? And when we do, like Roger reminded us a while ago, are we saying something about our worry, or are we saying something about the level of trust we have in God, in his ability to do what he says he will do? We get caught in worry, and when the world looks at us and says, they're every bit as worried as me, if not more, why would they want to be a part of this? They've already got enough worry. They don't need to add a layer of, I got to worry about eternity now. Worry. Flattery. Now, flattery will get you everywhere, you've heard. And we like flattery, but sometimes we let that stuff go to our heads. Sometimes we get too prideful about it. And sometimes we just tend to live on it. Let's all sit around and tell each other how great we are. And when we do that, we're not getting a whole lot accomplished. And we're spending a little too much time thinking about how great we are and not quite enough time thinking about how great he is. Number six, comfort. Now, if gluttony didn't hit you, maybe comfort will. We get pretty comfortable in life. And whatever level of comfort you're at, you understand what I'm talking about. And you may think there are others out there that have a little more than you, and there are. There are others out there that have it better, and they probably do. But at the same time, we get pretty comfortable, both within our lives when we're away from here, or very honestly in our lives when we are here. I saw a hilarious comic. I should have put it in the PowerPoint. It was a preacher search committee meeting. And the comic, the search committee was on one side of the table, and the candidate was on the other side of the table. And they said, we are looking for somebody who is dynamic and life-changing and knows the word and will counsel us and will help us to grow while we all stay exactly the same. And I looked at that and laughed and shook my head, and I thought, you know, we would never say those things out loud. But sometimes we think those. We like how things are. We want them to stay that way. We don't want things to change all that much. And so as long as you can work within those confines, everything is good. And God does not want us to be comfortable. And if you look at the life of Jesus, it is anything but comfortable. It is a life that is challenging day by day in different ways. Number seven, consumerism. If we have the greatest new thing, if we buy this, everything will be fine. If we win the lottery, it will all be good. The lottery is just a measly 90-something million this week. It's not $1.5 billion like it was before. That's not real life-changing money. I'll wait till it gets bigger again. Consumerism. If you just have the latest, greatest, whatever, everything will be good. And God says to us, nations have tried that since the beginning of time. And it never solves anything. And there's always something more out there. And as soon as you get it, they will create a better one. But we are so driven by consumerism. Maybe I should have saved this for next week when we will watch a football game where it costs millions of dollars to have a 30-second ad in there, and then they will spend the next day dissecting which was the best ad. We're all about stuff as a society. And James would write to us here, no, that's not who we need to be. And that's part of the sin that we might struggle with instead of sin somebody else struggles with. Number eight, okay, and now if you're not stiffened up in your chairs, here comes the moment. And again, not my list, but we'll talk about this for a minute. patriotism. The songs are in the book, so they must be okay. My Country, 'Tis of Thee's in there. We sang it a few weeks ago. Battle Hymn of the Republic is in there. All kinds of stuff. A lot of churches you will walk into this morning, you will find a flag somewhere. A lot of churches you walk into this morning, you will find the flag right up here, right up front. I am as patriotic as the next guy, generally speaking. I am the first generation of my family to not serve in the military, mainly because I'm, go back to fear at the beginning. Wasn't my calling, whatever you want to say, but had American flags on the house growing up, had an American flag tie when I started wearing ties. Still got it, but I don't wear ties as much anymore. Went to Washington, D.C., was fascinated. Back in the days, we put film in our cameras. Took 8 rolls of film walking around Washington, D.C., monuments, all that stuff. I'm not saying that we should not have love of country. And I don't think that the guy who wrote the list is saying that either. But when that is the one place we place our trust above everything else, we have a problem. Because if history will tell you anything, nations come and nations go. Now, would I like to think that this one will be here for our kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, great-great-grandkids, great-great? Yeah, I'd love to think for generations on that it will be here and that it will be the country that you want it to be. At the same time, what are we guaranteed about tomorrow? There are a lot of folks in our nation that are putting their trust in the hands of buffoons that we have watched debate each other. And for each of you this morning, you have a different picture of a different person in your mind with that. And we've probably got them all covered by the time we leave. They're people. They are just people. Now, should we engage in all of that? In a degree that doesn't make us look stupid, probably. In a degree that doesn't make God look bad, definitely. I have voted in almost every election I can think of. I'm dissatisfied with the results a lot. I'm a junkie of those things too, and I will watch debates and I will be frustrated and say, why didn't they say this? And why is this person leading? And I get all that. But when we get so caught up in the patriotism side of things that we forget, God is in control no matter who wins in November. God can operate and work through no matter who wins in November. The only reason, I heard this somewhere this weekend, and I wish I could remember who I heard, it might have been from Randy. The only reason we know the name of Pilate is because he intersected with Jesus. There's your major political big shot guy, and the only reason you know his name is because his life intersected with the life of Jesus. God is in control. And when you watch these debates and you shake your head and you wonder where's the good candidate, God is in control. Or when your guy doesn't win the nomination or the election, God is in control. When your country looks great and godly, God is in control. When your country is not the country you recognize from your childhood, God is in control. When we look like crazy people when it comes to things like race and injustice, God is in control. And when we get those things right, God is in control. God is in control. And maybe that's the great sin of all of these 9 as we look at them, is just the unwillingness to remember that and to keep it at the forefront of what we're doing. God is in control. And last, lying. How many times are you lied to in the course of a week by other Christians? How many times do you lie in the course of the week? And I don't know why. Sometimes it's just easier than the conversation that would follow otherwise. Sometimes you think it gets you out of trouble. Sometimes you're trying to tell the other person what they want to hear, maybe because you don't want pain that results of it, or maybe you're actually trying to save them from pain that results from it. But Christians have lost integrity somewhere along the way. If there are any truthful people on the face of the earth, it should be us. This is part of who we are and what we do. And again, as we think back over this list, surely I have hit most of us at some point in this. I know I've hit myself multiple times. We all struggle with different sin. And James says to us that when you know it, and when you see it, and when you recognize it, it's now time to do something about it, because if you don't, that is sin. And this morning, some of us will probably sin before we walk out of the room. Some of us will sin in our cars on the way home. Some of us will sin in the way we treat the server at the restaurant later. Some of us will sin in our thoughts, some of us in our words, some of us in the actions. And the beauty of all of this, and something we learned about in class with Hosea this morning, is regardless of how many times we have sinned, God still wants us back. He is not willing to give up on us. He's not willing to find somebody who will do it better. He is not willing to find somebody that breaks his heart less. He wants each of us to have a relationship with him. And so when we sin, he has given us a way out. And when you've been caught in something, is there anything better than the way out? He has sent his son here for us to show us a life without sin, what it would look like, and how impossible that is to reach, but to be a sacrifice that even with our sin, we can come back to him. And so this morning, we are all sinners. We're all sinners. Now, we are trying our best to overcome that, but we still slip up. And this morning, if there is sin that you need to confess, there is sin that we all need to confess. And if there are things that we need to pray about, we are happy to pray about that. And if, most importantly, if you have never accepted that gift of forgiveness that God puts out there for you, today is the day to do that. You can come and you can confess his name and let us know that you believe he is the Son of God. And you can be baptized in the name of Christ, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and your sins can be forgiven this morning. Whatever needs you may have, if there's something we can pray about, if you'd like to take him on in baptism, please come as we stand and sing.